Can you talk a little bit more about what you were saying about the Sutent and particularly about the bleeding? That's really fascinating.
I'm actually presenting the phase 2 trial at ASCO, which is 63 patients. And these were patients who were treated anywhere from second to fourth line. This agent looks promising with regard to its response rate, although the details I can't tell you at this point. Extremely well tolerated. But if you look at the package insert for Sutent for renal cell carcinoma in GIST tumors, you will see in the package insert a warning about treating lung cancer in the risk of hemorrhage, and they'll cite two patients that died of hemorrhage as a result of being on Sutent. Those two patients were my patients at our center, and so I have very firsthand knowledge of that. Now, in the reality, I'm not convinced that one of the patients really had a anti-angiogenic response bleeding effect. I think one of them did, but the other one is questionable. I think the take-home message is that we don't have enough experience with the VEGF TKIs to know that the risk of hemorrhage is really any different than what it is with bevacizumab. So I think we have to be a little careful in saying that these agents are different than bevacizumab. I just think we need some more data. Now, when you look at sorafenib and some of the AZ compounds, 2171 particularly, at least the early information doesn't suggest a high rate of pulmonary hemorrhage. But I think we have to realize that the experience has been rather limited at this point. We've not had a large or any randomized trials looking at this issue with the TKIs, and we're just getting into those right now.
That's interesting. The two patients that you had with the major bleeds, was that in the face of a response?
One of the patients clearly was progressing. And in fact, why I'm uncertain as to whether or not this was related to the drug is that this is a patient who we treated in the, I can't remember if it was the third or fourth line setting, but he had CT evidence of disease progression. We actually took him off sunitinib. We had declared prospectively that he was progressing. He ended up going to a skilled nursing facility and had a fatal pulmonary hemorrhage about 3 weeks afterwards. So when you look in the literature, you see that lung cancer patients die of pulmonary hemorrhage, typically because of disease progression. So I'm not quite sure that was sunitinib related. I think that was more disease related, but it did occur within 30 days of getting an investigational drug. And so we had to report it in that time period. The other patient actually was a patient who had collapse of her right upper lobe. She was on sunitinib for about 2 weeks. She came in the hospital for what looked like to be a pneumonia. She had actually, for the first time, had some air in her right upper lobe. So we thought that she was responding and maybe opening up that lobe. She went home and unfortunately died of a fatal pulmonary hemorrhage a couple days after she went home. She was actually due to come back the next week for her first CT scan on sunitinib to judge her response. And so other than her chest x-rays, we don't have good CT data to know whether she was responding or not. However, my feeling is, after reviewing this with multiple radiologists at our place, that it looked like she had some re-expansion of her right upper lobe, suggests that she was having a more proximal tumor response and allowing some air to be ventilating that right upper lobe. So that's what we're thinking.